It's Tuesday, December 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, Beijing reacts to U.S. President Donald Trump's national security strategy.
The response from the foreign ministry spokeswoman was that, you know, cooperation is the only choice.
Also ahead, recent cyber attacks have netted North Korean hackers millions of dollars in virtual currencies. And just what happens to the most famous Christmas tree in the United States? It's all next on VOA's International Edition. Monday, U.S. President Donald Trump outlined his national security strategy. During his speech, the president broke down what he called a new era of competition.
We accept that vigorous military, economic, and political contests are now playing out all around the world. We face rogue regimes that threaten the United States and our allies. We face terrorist organizations, transnational criminal networks, and others who spread violence and evil around the globe. We also face rival powers, Russia and China, that seek to challenge American influence, values, and wealth. We will attempt to build a great partnership with those and other countries, but in a manner that always protects our national interest.
Joining me on the phone is VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
So, Bill, what has been the reaction from Beijing thus far?
Well, so far the reaction has been a bit muted. Beijing has tried to put the focus more on cooperation and getting into a line-by-line kind of response to all of the different details that were outlined and criticisms that were outlined in the report today at the foreign ministry's regular briefing. The response from the foreign ministry spokeswoman was that, you know, cooperation is the only choice. That's the right choice. A little bit earlier, the embassy in Washington, D.C. had released a statement that talked a little bit about how it's a choice between cooperation and confrontation. And, of course, you know, cooperation is the right choice. State media so far has kind of been about the same. I mean, they're talking about the risks that this could pose to the relationship. At the foreign ministry briefing, the spokeswoman talked about, you know, the importance of China to the U.S. economy, how the two economies together, the world's largest developed and developing economy, you know, need each other. The world needs them as well. And any kind of effort to disrupt that would not only impact the two countries, but the world as well.
So that's been the foreign ministry response. What has been the response from the everyday person living in China on social media or on online platforms?
Well, as you know, things are tightly controlled in China. So how much of the true commentary that's getting out there, we don't know. But definitely a lot of people talking about this on social media, putting their comments up there when they can. And if they're, you know, not the right comments, then they'll get removed. But, you know, there were some that were honoring this criticism, saying, you know, thank you for giving this criticism because it was treating China like, you know, another global power. And that was kind of a reward of sorts. There were some that were, of course, criticizing Washington, saying that these are just hawkish views. You know, some people said it was, you know, really what Trump was saying was an open secret, that basically what we were getting today was filterless Trump directly speaking, you know, his mind out loud. Another thing that people were kind of talking about, they were noting that, well, China wasn't referred to as an enemy but a strategic competitor. And there was some discussion about that. Some people thought it was, you know, that may be a bad thing, but others felt that, you know, competition is a good thing. If you don't have any competition, there's not going to be any progress between countries.
How might this actually affect the bilateral relation? I mean, you're saying that the foreign ministry is going out there and saying that cooperation is the only way forward because candidate Trump and President Trump have been very vocal about criticizing China and its trade relation with the United States, while at the same time asking Beijing to take a larger role in dealing with North Korea?
Yeah, you know, we're really going to have to wait and see. We already know that, some serious trade actions are in the works. There are some things that have started to roll out already. And it really depends, and this is something that analysts that I was speaking with today were talking about. It depends on the actions that, the U.S. administration takes, how tough it really gets.
All right. VOA's Bill Ide is in Beijing and joining me by phone. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
The Kremlin also has lambasted U.S. President Donald Trump's new national security strategy as, quote, imperial, but lauded the U.S. for willing to cooperate with Russia in areas of common interest. Now joining me in the studio is VOA social media correspondent Andrew Palcheski. Hello.
Hey, Steve. Good to be here with you.
So we heard a little bit about what social media in China is saying about the national security strategy. What about the U.S.?
Well, if I had to distill down the reaction on social media in the U.S. to one word, it would be a word not uncommon to politics and to the conversations that I've had on the show about social media in the United States: division. There are some who are concerned about the confrontational tone that this new policy takes on issues like China's economy and the defense buildup. There are others who are fully behind this new policy, saying that it aligns with President Trump's pledge to put the United States first and deliver on his oft-cited campaign slogan to make America great again. And then there are some people with a lot of time on their hands who actually counted the references in this national security plan and found that China was actually the most mentioned country, used 23 times, followed by Korea, mentioned 18 times. So certainly a lot of focus on Asia, and certainly China, as you mentioned, is going to be a big part of President Trump's strategy going forward.
Absolutely. Now, what else is trending online these days?
Well, also sticking in Asia, sticking with the White House says that the WannaCry cyber attack that last year locked more than 300,000 computers in 150 countries was perpetrated by North Korea. And I know you're going to be covering this later on in the show, but there's a sense of disbelief from some on social media. How can a country where the internet technology is so severely restricted, when citizens are literally starving, how can they come up with such a widespread cyber attack? People, however, countering that, saying that there is a big disconnect between the people in North Korea and the government. They are very sophisticated technologically, and they have very strong cyber abilities. Others suggesting that North Korea may have had support for this attack, and many pointing the blame where? To China.
All right. Big thank you to VOA social media correspondent Andrew Palcheski for those stories today.
Thank you.
Among the top stories in the world this hour, Yemen's Houthi rebels fired a missile Tuesday at Saudi Arabia's capital, saying it was aimed at Riyadh's Yamea Palace. Several villages are said to have been set ablaze in Cameroon's English-speaking southwestern town of Mamfi after armed separatists attacked military installations and killed four soldiers. Myanmar and Bangladesh formed a joint working group to oversee the repatriation of Rohingya refugees, but the return is likely to be delayed. These stories and more on our website, voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
It's raining outside and your joints and back are hurting, so there's got to be a connection between the two, right? Well, not really. Researchers at the Harvard Medical School have released a new study that suggests there is no link between rainy days and joint or back pain. The Harvard researchers made their findings after sifting through and analyzing insurance records of more than 11 million doctor visits by older Americans between 2008 and 2012, along with daily rainfall data gathered by thousands of National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration weather stations. Study leader Anupam Jena, a professor of healthcare policy at Harvard, says that no matter how they looked at the data, they didn't see any connection between rainfall and physician visits for joint or back pain. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
From the Voice of America, this is International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Tom Bossert, Homeland Security Advisor to President Donald Trump, publicly blamed North Korea for unleashing the so-called WannaCry cyber attack that crippled hospitals, banks, and other companies across the globe earlier this year.
After careful investigation, the United States is publicly attributing the massive WannaCry cyber attack to North Korea. We do not make this allegation lightly. We do so with evidence, and we do so with partners. Other governments and private companies agree. The United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and Japan have seen our analysis, and they join us in denouncing North Korea for WannaCry. Commercial partners have also acted. Microsoft traced the attack to cyber affiliates of North Korean government, and others in the security community have contributed their analysis.
Buzzer called it a widespread attack that cost billions and that North Korea was directly responsible. Now, North Korea has repeatedly denied responsibility for WannaCry and called other allegations about cyber attacks a smear campaign. However, as Grace Lee reports, a series of recent cyber attacks has netted North Korean hackers millions of dollars in virtual currencies like Bitcoin, with more attacks expected as international sanctions drive the country to seek new sources of cash.
A series of high-profile cyber attacks are tracing back to North Korea's wallet. Pyongyang's hackers have netted millions of dollars in virtual currencies like Bitcoin, with more attacks expected to be on the way as international sanctions drive the country to seek new ways to make cash. According to analysts, it's the sky-high jump in value this year that makes Bitcoin an attractive target for the North. Pyongyang's state-backed hackers are being linked to a rising number of cybercrimes, including the so-called WannaCry attack that crippled hospitals, banks, and other companies around the world earlier this year by effectively holding devices hostage. South Korea is home to some of the world's busiest virtual currency exchanges and accounts, hosting about a quarter of Bitcoin trading in any given day. Researchers say that attacks earlier this year on exchanges like BitThumb, Coiniz, and Ubit in the South all have the digital fingerprints of hackers from North Korea. Seoul is now considering countermeasures over the attacks, including additional sanctions. Sources tell Reuters the amount stolen could be worth up to $82 million.
That was reporter Grace Lee. Authorities say the death toll from a tropical storm that pummeled the central Philippines rose to 43, with hopes fading for dozens of others still missing after massive landslides. Slow-moving Kai Tak finally swept out to the South China Sea Monday after inducing days of heavy rain that led to deadly floods and landslides as it sliced across the central islands last weekend. Ana Vila Caranoo lost her home in the storm.
The flood carried things away, and when the influx of water got stronger, there went our house.
The government's disaster monitoring agency listed 43 dead in an updated tally and said 45 other people were still missing, many of them feared buried by mud avalanches that struck the small island of Biliran. Bulldozers continue to dig for survivors in houses buried by landslides on Biliran, located about 500 kilometers southeast of Manila. Authorities said the island accounted for 30 of the 43 fatalities, with 31 residents missing. According to the government, about half of the more than 100,000 people who fled their homes remained inside evacuation centers this week. As rescue efforts continued, Philippine authorities monitored another low-pressure area in the Pacific Ocean that the State Weather Service said could develop into a storm and strike the archipelago over the Christmas weekend. The Philippines is battered by 20 major storms each year on average, and many of them are deadly. This is VOA.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, managing editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24-7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden tells us as 2017 draws to a close, the Islamic State's dream of a caliphate in Iraq and Syria is in shambles. A persistent ground campaign by Iraqi government troops and coalition-backed forces in Syria, combined with Western air power, finally forced the terror group to retreat to the shadows. Yet, even as Iraqi, Syrian, and Iranian officials declare victory, the United States and its allies warn the fight is far from over.
The Islamic State terror group made sure 2017 got off to a bloody start, sending a shooter into the Reina nightclub in Istanbul, killing 39 people on January 1st.
The panicking people, the blood, the noise of the gunshots, the explosions, that's what I keep on thinking about.
But the shock of the deadly terror attack masked a different reality in Iraq, where Islamic State was on its heels as security forces pushed into Mosul, the Iraqi capital of the group's self-declared caliphate.
The enemy collapsed in front of us, leaving their weapons and equipment, and ran away after we inflicted heavy losses on them.
Meanwhile, Islamic State faced a backlash in other parts of the Muslim world. Tunisians taking to the streets to protest the return of fighters. In the U.S., a new president warned Islamic State and groups like it would face annihilation.
We have not used the real abilities that we have. We've been restrained. We have to get rid of ISIS. We have no choice.
As part of the stepped-up effort, the U.S. sought to empower anti-Islamic State forces for the first time, providing the SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces, with armored vehicles as they began a new push toward the terror group's Syrian capital of Raqqa. In Baghdad, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis.
We're going to continue to stand by the Iraqi army, the Iraqi people who are fighting this enemy.
Yet, as Islamic State faced more pressure in Iraq and Syria, its influence could be felt elsewhere. In February, an apparent IS sympathizer used a machete to attack guards outside the Louvre in Paris. And the terror group claimed a Palm Sunday attack, killing dozens in Alexandria, Egypt. IS also flexed its muscles in Pakistan and Afghanistan, claiming a March attack on a Kabul hospital, killing more than 30. The U.S. response? Dropping its largest non-nuclear bomb on a key Islamic State cave and tunnel complex in Afghanistan.
Let me be clear. We will not relent in our mission to fight alongside our Afghan comrades to destroy ISIS-K in 2017.
By July, Islamic State's self-declared caliphate was in tatters, its Iraqi capital of Mosul liberated after months of fighting.
I announce from here to the entire world the end, failure, and collapse of the mythical and terrorist Islamic State group.
3 months later, rejoicing in Raqqa, as IS fighters fled the self-declared caliphate's Syrian capital. Also in October, a setback for IS in the Philippines, a five-month battle to take the southern city of Marawi, ending in defeat. Yet, even as Islamic State lost territory and fighters, its global reach was felt in attacks on Stockholm, Paris, Barcelona, and New York.
ISIS is clearly demonstrating continued ability to pursue its global war, its campaign of attacks in the West. So we're seeing a surge in ISIS activity in Northern Africa, in Afghanistan, and in other theaters such as Southeast Asia.
The terror group apparently heeding the advice of its leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, in an audio recording from September. The path to victory, Baghdadi said, is to be patient and resist. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
In the United States, 25 to 30 million Christmas trees are sold every year. And after the holiday, most end up in the trash, but not all of them. Some are put through wood chippers to become mulch for gardens and pathways, and others are anchored in lakes or bays to provide artificial reef habitat for fish. But what happens to the nation's best-known tree? Well, Faith Lapidus has that story.
Three, two, one! huge Christmas tree in New York's Rockefeller Center has lit up the night each holiday season for 85 years. This year's tree is a 12-ton, nearly 80-year-old, 23-meter-tall Norway spruce. It's from State College, Pennsylvania. When it's taken down on January 9th, it will become part of another holiday tradition, milled into planks and donated to Habitat for Humanity for use in homes. It's a chance to spread holiday cheer and draw attention to the group's work providing affordable housing. Wood from last year's tree is now being used in homes in Newburgh, New York, 80 kilometers upriver from Rockefeller Center. The boards have a special stamp.
I love seeing it arrive. I love seeing the stamp. I love knowing that it was part of this tree that brings such joy.
Wood from firs and spruce trees tends to have knots and imperfections and can't support a lot of weight, so Habitat volunteers use it to stabilize floor joists or for interior walls.
We got a big, giant chunk of it. We can't really use that in the house. But in smaller pieces, we can use that.
Once the homes are finished, most of the wood is hidden in walls and ceilings. But homeowners know it's there.
So it wasn't just thrown away. It was used in my house.
And that knowledge can keep the holiday spirit alive. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And that is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for joining us. A huge thank you to director Patrice Martin and engineer John Dryden. You know what? You can follow Voice of America on social media like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for stories, pictures, videos, and more. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have an absolutely fantastic day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
ISIS may have been largely routed in Syria, but the nightmare of violence and devastation in the country continues in various enclaves, including in opposition-held eastern Ghouta, located on the outskirts of Damascus. According to the United Nations, 400,000 people are under siege there, cut off from aid and medical help. Jan Englund, UN senior advisor for Syria, told reporters that obstacles stopping the delivery of humanitarian aid and carrying out of medical evacuations are resulting in the deaths of children. We need help from parties on the ground, by the Syrian government, by all of those nations who have influence, and they are not helping us as they should, he said. Unfortunately, the Syrian government, with support from its ally Russia, is responsible for the siege in eastern Ghouta, and that includes stepped-up bombing attacks targeting hospitals, markets, and other civilian areas. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert condemned the attacks and continuing siege.
Deliberate tactics to starve Syrian civilians, including women and children, block humanitarian and medical aid, bomb hospitals, medical personnel, and first responders in eastern Ghouta. We consider that to be deeply troubling. The lives of Syrian children and families are not political tools, and we call on the international community to swiftly condemn those horrific acts.
Ms. Nauert also called on Russia to live up to its obligation to uphold the de-escalation zone in eastern Ghouta and to end all further attacks against civilians in Syria.
The atrocities reveal the Assad regime's utter disregard for its own people and the extent to which it will go to retain its grip on power.
Acts such as these, said spokesperson Nauert, clearly demonstrate the need for the international community to vigorously support the UN-led Geneva process for a political resolution to the conflict that respects the will of the Syrian people. They also emphasize the urgent need for unhindered humanitarian access and renewal of the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2165 on humanitarian access.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.